Hey guys, welcome back to the channel McNally Money, the new home of Power Mining Analysis. In today's video, Anthony Power and I are going to be joined by the CEO of Bit Digital, Sam Tabar, to discuss their recently released Q4 and 2023 financial results. There's a lot to go through in today's presentation. It's starting to look like the Bitcoin miners have bottomed, and we're seeing some green shoots in the market today. So a lot of optimism. We're going to get Sam's take on that, and of course, the proposed 30% tax on Bitcoin mining stocks. Now, before we get into all that, please take a second, hit the like button, you guys. It's a huge help to myself, the channel. Anthony loves it, and it's free to do. If you're not already subscribed, McNally Money, feel free to join. And let us know in the comment section below if you're currently holding shares of Bit Digital, what you thought about earnings, and their outlook and strategy for 2024. Now, with that being said, let's get into today's video. Okay guys, so that's right. Today's video, we've got two special guests for you, our resident Bitcoin mining analyst, Anthony Power, and our good friend, Sam Tabar from Bit Digital, who just came out with Q4 and F23 financial results. So Sam, welcome back. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, you're becoming a regular on the program, Sam. It wasn't too long ago we were here talking HPC and strategy. Today we get to talk about earnings. Before we get into that, though, very interesting time in the Bitcoin mining sector. We've seen a lot of weakness in the Bitcoin mining companies themselves. Some of that money is now flowing through to, we suspect, the ETFs, MicroStrategy. We've seen a decoupling of the Bitcoin price and some of the Bitcoin miners. Now, lo and behold, today, we're actually starting to see some strength in the sector, even though Bitcoin has pulled back a little bit. Sam, in your opinion, do you think the pain is kind of baked in for these miners? The worries about the halving, the 30% tax, are we close to bottom here?
There's a couple of questions there. On the 30% tax, I need to mention that US lawmakers probably understand that draconian tax legislation is simply going to drive the entire Bitcoin mining industry away from the United States. And this is basically banning Bitcoin mining through the back door, which is by putting a tax. Bit Digital used to be in China many years ago, and we felt that was a jurisdictional risk. And that's why we migrated our entire fleet from China to the United States. Where we thought the rug would not be pulled from under us like it was almost in China, because we did migrate the fleet prior to the ban. But this is just a ban in another name. And that's one of the reasons why we're pretty paranoid about jurisdictional diversification. We have operations in Iceland, in Canada, in a number of states in the United States, and we keep looking at different jurisdictions. I just got off a call this morning with another jurisdiction in the world, and it's just important to have that jurisdictional diversification. If you have all your eggs in one basket, you can get screwed. And I really think that if Biden wins the next election, this tax is going to go through, and people aren't thinking about that. So that's pretty scary, frankly. The other question, you got to diversify in order to hedge the risk, which is something we've done. And it's in our DNA because we've seen it happen in China. And the other question about, I think you asked about whether the pain is baked in for the Bitcoin mining sector. Look, the ETF, Bitcoin ETF, I think has proven to be net negative for the mining sector. In the past, people have been able to express a positive Bitcoin view by buying buying stocks, and you know, whether it's Marathon or Riot or Bit Digital or whatever, they would buy into the sector to express a sort of a leveraged Bitcoin view, the Bitcoin on steroids. That was the thesis. But now with this ETF, people can express a positive Bitcoin view in that manner, and so there's more in the menu for people who want to express that view. The only issue I would say for those people who are expressing a view of Bitcoin through ETF, the ETFs are not leveraged. MicroStrategy, I would say, is a Bitcoin leveraged play. The sector, Bitcoin, the Bitcoin mining sector, is a leveraged Bitcoin play. But there are some company and operational risks in the Bitcoin mining sector. You have these rewards that are being cut in half. You have companies who may be growing too quickly, just growth at all costs. That's not a good mentality in people can sort of drink their own Kool-Aid and fall, like we saw a couple of years ago. And I feel like that might happen again.
Sure. Appreciate your comments there, and definitely some timely topics. Hoping for everyone who's watching this sake that we have kind of felt all the pain in the sector and we do start to see some strength. And yeah, you guys are a great example, Sam, of a company that's proactively diversified geographically and your revenue streams, actually, just to kind of hedge against some of that political or regulatory risk. So that's great. Now, moving along here a little bit, you just came out with earnings, Q4, F23. What were some of the highlights from that, Sam?
Well, look, here's the big highlight that I want you, everybody who's listening to this, to think about. Last year, we made $44 million. We did better than people was expecting. We have a contract right now, just in the HPC side alone, for $50 million, and that's growing to $100 million. That contract alone is worth more than the entire revenue we made last year in Bitcoin mining. And we're doubling the size of our Bitcoin mining fleet by the end of this year. So you couldn't have it any better. You have this contract that's $50 million that's worth more than our entire revenue of Bitcoin mining last year. That revenue is going to grow to $100 million by the end of the year. And we're doubling the size of our Bitcoin mining fleet. That's really positive. And the capital markets, much to my, frankly, my anger, is not giving us credit for that.
Yeah. That's great news. I mean, we've covered this in previous podcasts about this growth strategy that you've got in place there. And, you know, you were the first miners to come out with a real partner. We've seen other miners now come out with partners. We've yet to see what those revenues look like. But you've put everything on the table. You've now increased your annualized revenues, not once but twice, because I think the initial was 35 million, quickly went to 50 million, now we're talking 100 million. And you're right to say, I mean, in 2023, you only produced 43 million in revenue from your Bitcoin mining operations and other small income that you'd arrive there. So 2024 looks to be a great year. Now, you're looking to grow both of those businesses. Mm-hmm. I know you can't give margins. We've heard from like the likes of Dan Roberts from Iris Energy, Iron as they're called now, and we've heard from Hive Digital, from Frank and from Aidan Killick, with regards to what they're talking about in margins. They come out with numbers. You know, if you are to invest, say, you know, for every dollar now in going Bitcoin mining and in terms of HPC,
yeah.
Are you looking at good returns in both those areas? I mean, we know that the HPC is not correlated to Bitcoin price; it's more guaranteed. But if the Bitcoin price stays at say where it is at the moment, say that mid 60 point throughout the year, where do you see the upside?
Yeah. So look, it depends on the market prices for the equipment. For us to reach our $100 million revenue target at Bit Digital, the HPC side, we have to invest about $60 million at current prices for the equipment. To double our Bitcoin mining fleet to add 3 exahash, that'll cost about $45 million at current pricing. So capital allocation decisions will continue to be made on a returns basis. Right now, the margins are much more lucrative on the HPC side than they are on the Bitcoin mining side, even on a pre-halving basis. So obviously, from a returns perspective, it makes sense to exponentially grow the HPC business as aggressively as we can. And we're going to do that. I look forward to announcing new milestones, getting to that 100 million in the medium term, perhaps short term future.
We certainly look forward to the Q1 results coming out, because that will give us more information around this. And you know, just touched on the HPC side, I mean, we've had quite a few CEOs and chief mining officers on the podcast in recent time. We had Adam Sullivan yesterday from Core Scientific. They're moving into HPC. They're sort of like, in terms of hash rate, you've got to put them in the sort of like the top 3-4 miners, and the only one of those top 3-4 miners to move into that space. But we've seen some of the other miners are sort of like, are just throwing a little bit of scorn at the sort of HPC side.
Right.
And we've covered this in previous podcasts. I mean, From the miners that I look at the moment, I think 75-80% of them are going into HPC. So it can't be like a one-off. What do you have a sort of like anything like as a response to what you know that the you know do they not know enough about this area? I mean, you know, we're seeing three prominent miners coming out now and saying that the margins are very good. Is this just sort of like talk of a bubble, or is this realistic?
No, I mean, if anyone's going to, it's kind of funny for him to hear any Bitcoin mining CEO say that AI is a bubble. Bitcoin has a lot of very interesting value, but a lot of people would also say it's a bubble. So AI has a lot of, there are a lot of real world applications in AI. And if you're not convinced that AI is going to transform a bunch of industries, then I don't really have any time for you. Clearly, AI is going to be clearly transforming a bunch of businesses, from marketing, even law, finance, film, art, you name it. AI will be having a role in all of those industries, whether we like it or not. And so no, AI is definitely not a bubble. And the people who can provide that special computational power to people who are building AI applications, that's a really good place to be. That's selling the picks and shovels to the people who are going to the gold rush. And that's what we're doing. We are renting specialized computational power.
One of the questions that comes out, again, around the HPC is about the five nines. And in terms of uptime, from your facility, and you know, I don't need to give the exact one, but from your facility in Iceland, are you achieving sort of like those sort of targets or the expected targets from the industry or certainly the targets that are in your contract at the moment?
But that last part is very important. So the uptimes are defined by what the contract says. So we don't do a one size fits all for our clients. Our specialization is making it happen very quickly, but also we're customizing solutions per client, and each client is different. And by the way, each margin profile is going to be different per client. The uptime is determined, the sufficient uptime is determined by the contractual needs that are stated in the contract by the client. But yeah, you have to have the uptimes really high.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
Thanks.
Thanks, Sam. Now, switching gears a little bit, one of the numbers I was pleased to see was the fleet efficiency. It came out at 28.8 joules per terahash, which is very competitive. I think, Anthony, you'd normally quote around 35 as kind of the group average. I know a lot of people are pushing sub-25 post-halving, but you guys are in great shape there. Sam, you've already mentioned some of the fleet upgrades doubling the capacity this year. What's the targeted efficiency by year end, and what are you kind of striving for going into halving here?
Yeah, look, we aim to improve that metric even more. We're planning on doubling the size of our fleet, as mentioned. So it's every incremental miner purchase is going to improve the overall efficiency. So if we were to hit 6 exahash target with S21 purchases, our fleet efficiency will probably be around 23.
Okay, great. And that would be year-end target?
Yeah.
Okay.
Have you had the opportunity to test any of the S21, T21 models from Bitmain? I mean, normally when these models come out first, they give you know a few to the miners to sort of like test their facilities before you start making orders. It's something that you've done yourselves?
I'd have to ask our field engineer if we did that. I'm unsure.
And you've indicated there that, you know, looking at the S21s, is that, I mean, you've bought some of the S19J Pros at, I think, 120 terahash.
That's right.
Which have been very, very, very good purchase for you. And in terms of a return, are you now seeing that actually the S21 or the T21 is like the sort of like the standard to be looking at?
I think so. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, we had Ben on there last week, Chief Mining Officer for Bitfarms, and they've done testing on the T21, and this is where you can actually increase the efficiency. You can ramp it up and overclock the machine within the warranty. And he said the numbers were fantastic. He said, you know, the numbers that came on the box were being exceeded, you know, significantly, not just exceeded, but 20-30% higher. So, you know, if that information's, you know, being passed around, I mean, I know you know, you're not in competition with any of the miners. You're in competition against the global hash rate and make sure you get your machines online. So, but, you know, it's quite a cordial group of of people whereby, you know, things like that, you know, can be sort of like, you know, shared. Are you picking up on what other people are sort of like saying about what benefits they get?
We're friends with a few of our peers, and we always share information on that. And you're right, it's the competition is not amongst each other. I mean, I guess it is amongst each other in terms of mind share, which is why I'm on this show. But we're not in competition in terms of like Bitcoin mining companies don't have clients. It's all self mining, so we're not competing for clients.
You know, the nice thing about
that, you might be competing for a site or something like that down the road if you're going down the infrastructure route.
Right. Nice. On the HPC side, though, that's different. You are competing for clients, and that's the problem with a lot of our peers who are announcing aspirations. They don't have a client. They're just talking about, you know, they have these non-binding LOIs or just we bought a bunch of HPC 100s, H100s. I mean, that's not, as mentioned in the show last time, we're not doing a build it and they may come approach. We actually have a client. We're getting even more clients on that business. And that's the most important thing. There are three important things. It's data center, H100s or whichever iteration of that, and a client. And you need all three of those things to have a business. If you have one or two of those things, it's just
maybe a fourth thing would be to get Kevin Costner on the show and highlight that.
Now,
you feel the dreams there.
Now, Sam,
right,
I was...
right, right. That's where the quote comes from. That's right.
I was going to say the nice thing about no clients on the Bitcoin side is no sales and marketing staff or expenses there too. But now, Sam, the other area I wanted to spend some time, one of the key differentiators for me with you guys is the Ethereum staking and HODL. So I wanted to get a clear kind of, I guess, vision of how do you think about HODL at your company going into halving? Are you focusing on Bitcoin or Ethereum? And what can we kind of expect throughout 2024? Are you going to be converting Bitcoin to Ethereum as well?
Yeah, I like that question. I think, you know, for the Bitcoin maxis, they're not going to like my answer. That's fine. But we hold about 15,000 ETH right now stacked, and we stake 12,000 of that. I think we're one of the only public listed companies in the United States with that much ETH on its balance sheet. And it makes no sense to me that others aren't doing that, because you can capture a yield on the ETH, and we take that yield from the ETH and we pour that back into Bitcoin mining, and then you get the rewards from Bitcoin mining, convert some of that into ETH, stake the ETH, spit that yield from the staking back into Bitcoin mining. So it's this flywheel that we invented. It works really well for us. And we're the only ones doing it. And we're the only ticker, really, where you can actually get exposure to staking economics, because we're staking so much of this ETH. So in a way, we're kind of a proxy for that.
And on the staking topic, I looked into some of the numbers. The number I saw was 4.4%. But can you give some details around how frequently is the payment made? Is it a monthly percentage? Is it yearly? Is it locked up? How does it all work on the staking side?
Yeah, there are some complications on that. It would require a more technical deep dive. I would reserve that for another time, because that's a technical deep dive.
Sure. Yeah, we would definitely like to hear about it, Sam, because it is a very unique differentiator for you guys. And I know a lot of people are very bullish about Ethereum and Ethereum pricing now, basically saying it's next in line, right?
Well, someone joked that we were like the MicroStrategy of Ethereum, frankly. So, you know, that was an interesting comment, because no one else is doing it.
Hey, and you know what? There's probably a spot in the market for a MicroStrategy of Ethereum anyways. So that's, a good comment to make. Anthony, I'll kick it over to you now.
Yeah, one strategy that obviously you've utilized is obviously the asset light strategy. So you have your machines hosted in all your locations. We've seen, you know, Fred Thiel from Marathon, they've done 180 degree about turn now on that strategy, and they're sort of buying up sites. Whether they're buying them at value prices, you know, only time will tell. But they've bought, you know, three sites in as many months, and I think something like 55% of their total hash rate now will be in infrastructure sites that they control. And also the fact that they're highlighting the savings from doing that are quite significant. I mean, I think they were paying, you know, 6.5 towards 7 cents a kilowatt hour for a hosted thing. Now, then the energy price they can get is about closer to 4 cents. So that they will make some savings on those sites. Is the infrastructure option something that you're even considering, or do you feel actually we get a reasonable good margin from the hosting and, you know, we're happy to take that forward?
So, yeah, two things. First, Fred might have to do another 180 degrees if Biden puts in that tax. So, just letting you know.
Fred again.
So, just saying, like that vertical integration is good to capture the full margin of the business that could be actualized, and we are considering a hybrid approach in which we vertically integrate. So we are actually in the market for buying a data center. It's the first time I mentioned that publicly, I guess. So we're happy to do that, but it has to be at the right price. We don't pursue growth at all costs. That's not our philosophy. The price has to be right. And it could be in the US or outside the US. Outside the US is also pretty interesting for us for the reasons we stated.
Yeah, I mean, I just did a tweet this morning, actually. I was looking at the numbers for their sites, and it was coming out for infrastructure at a cost of about, an average cost of about close to $450,000 a megawatt. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that, what, I mean, I know you're good on the numbers. Is that sort of like, is that a ballpark, or is that, you know, I spoke with the CEO last night from Cathedra, and they were building sites at like a third of that price.
Yeah, it's all over the place. I remember once being shown one for $1 million per. I was just, you know, it's really all over the place, and I feel like price discovery isn't really efficient yet on these things,
yeah.
Which is why we just don't want to snap anything up. It has to be the right price.
Yeah. We're
very returns focused, and we don't take overly risky bets. We just don't.
With regards to growing to, we think obviously 6 is a realistic target to get to down the year. So that's literally doubling your hash rate where you are now. And with miner prices the way they are now, where do you see the sort of like the miner prices, and how does, you know, how will that impact decisions on growth going forward?
Oh, I think the mining prices will probably get even cheaper after the halving. So that's why we're sort of waiting until we buy more equipment, just to wait until after the halving, because prices will go down since it's just not as profitable as it used to be. And that's why we're leaning forward in the meantime on the HPC side, because the margins are incredibly great. So while we're leaning on these fat margins on HPC, we're keeping a very close eye on the mining equipment pricing, which we believe is going to go down after the halving.
And what's your view on new entrants coming in to provide and manufacture machines? So we've got the likes of Epic, we've got the likes of Auradine, we've got the likes of Block, we've now got the likes of a fellow miner, Bitdeer, who have just released an update on their latest miner with an 18.1 joules per terahash efficiency rate. Is this good for the Bitcoin mining space, or do you think actually the likes of Bitmain, Canaan, and MicroBT are just so big that it's not going to really impact on people's decisions? It's going to be quite challenging for them to back into this.
I think it's going to be too challenging at this point. That's just my opinion. I hope I'm wrong, but I think right now the barriers of entry to get into this sector, especially with those three giants, it's going to be an uphill battle.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, that's fair. And we had Adam Sullivan on from Coors yesterday, and he said a very similar thing, Sam, in terms of equipment pricing and even your pursuit of that data center, maybe some opportunities post-halving come up as well. So
That's right.
I know we've covered a lot today, a lot of excitement. As you said, Sam, I think the one statement that really stuck to my mind today is just you have a single contract that's bringing in more revenue than the entire last year's mining operation. I think that pretty well sums it up.
That's the takeaway.
Yeah, no kidding. But I will give you the chance to top that one. So I'll kick it back to you for any final thoughts. Anthony, anything we've forgotten here?
No, I think we've covered the basics with Sam today. You know, it's been a good podcast. I'm just off to get the baseball and go and throw a few throws with my father out in the garden there.
There you go.
All right, gentlemen, it's always great to speak with you, and thanks for having me again on the show. I really appreciate it, and please invite me anytime. It's fun to talk with you guys.
Thanks, Sam.
Likewise. Talk soon, guys.